Hello, and welcome to Field Lab Earth, the podcast that's all about past and present advances in the fields of agronomic, crop, soil, and environmental sciences. Today we'll be talking to Dr. John Spolstra about his paper, Artificial Sweeteners Reveal Septic System Effluent in Rural Groundwater, published in the Journal of Environmental Quality. I'm your host, Abby Morrison. Let's talk about science. Hi, John. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you.
Excellent. Well, why don't we just launch right in, and you can tell me kind of some of your academic and professional background so we can get to know you a little better?
Sure. I got my PhD from the University of Waterloo in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, back in 2004, and that was in the Department of Earth Sciences. I worked for a few years after that at the University of Waterloo as a researcher, environmental chemistry. Then in 2007, I got a job with Environment and Climate Change Canada in a groundwater group doing environmental chemistry. I'm also an adjunct assistant professor at the University of Waterloo, where I supervise undergraduate and graduate research projects, again, in environmental chemistry.
Excellent. Well, we're talking about wastewater today, so can you kind of tell me what qualifies something as wastewater, how it kind of gets into some of these systems that we're talking about in the first place?
Yeah, so wastewater, household wastewater, is basically any of the water that goes down the drains in your house. You know, that's everything you flush down the toilet, what goes down the shower and sinks and from your laundry. So if you live in the city, your wastewater from your house will end up going into the sewer system. And that all gets directed to a municipal wastewater treatment facility, which cleans up the water and the waste, separates the solids from the liquid. And ultimately, once that water is treated, it usually will get discharged to a lake or a river once it meets the environmental guidelines. If you live in the country, out in the rural areas, then your household wastewater would be treated by a septic system, which is basically a, sort of like a personal wastewater treatment plant. Basically, there's a bunch of different types, various treatment methods for septic systems, as well as municipal wastewater treatment plants. But basically, the septic systems consist of a tank where the primary treatment happens and the solids are separated from the liquid. And then that liquid then goes out into a series of tubes or tiles. Those have holes in it and lets the treated water trickle down through the soil where it's treated further. And ultimately, then it trickles down into the groundwater.
Great. We're going to be talking about some of the methods that you can use to track where this wastewater is going after it leaves these systems. So can you give me kind of some of the ways we've treated these in the past, kind of how we treat them now? Anything about that?
Yeah, so basically the reason we want to know where wastewater goes in the environment is because even after treatment, there is some chemicals in the wastewater that can pose a health risk to humans and to aquatic organisms such as fish. So we have to make sure that we have tools to be able to track where the wastewater goes and to make sure that it's being treated. Some of the compounds that can be in wastewater include bacteria, viruses, as well as some organic chemicals such as pharmaceuticals and drugs that we consume. And these can also be very detrimental to human health as well as fish. But they're also very expensive to analyze for some of these compounds. So the reason we're using these what we call tracer compounds is because they're specific to wastewater. So if we find them, we know that we found wastewater in the environment. Some of the compounds that have been used for this purpose in the past, or some common ones are like caffeine, which of course is in our coffee and our tea, and chocolate. It makes it through the wastewater treatment process. Another common one is acetaminophen, which people probably know better by the brand name of Tylenol. So again, it's a medicine that we consume for treatment of pain and fever, and it also doesn't break down completely during the wastewater treatment processes. And so we can use it to again, trace wastewater. And then there's a bunch of other more sort of exotic compounds, such as carbamazepine and primidone, which are anti-seizure medications, so for instance, to treat epilepsy. Those are also can be used as wastewater tracers. And another one would be cottonine, which is a breakdown product of nicotine. So these chemicals are fairly specific to wastewater, and they make it through the treatment process. So they end up in the environment. The artificial sweeteners are sort of the newest wastewater tracer, and they are somewhat better than these other compounds in several ways. First of all, the artificial sweeteners are found in wastewater at concentrations that are higher than some of these other chemicals that we would look for. And not only that, they last longer in the environment. So we can trace the wastewater after it's been released for longer periods of time, after it's been diluted in the rivers or lakes or wherever it's going. So it turns out that the artificial sweeteners are perhaps the best tracer of wastewater that researchers have.
Can you tell me kind of how you guys figured out that these artificial sweeteners were next edge of what to look for?
Well, we have the instrument in our lab, and our technician was sort of looking through the scientific literature for new methods that we could try with this instrument that we have. And she was reading about the measurement of artificial sweeteners in foods, and she thought with the instrument that we have, we could do the same thing and apply that to the samples that we routinely collect as part of our water quality research. So that was back in about 2008. And around the same time, actually, the first scientific papers on artificial sweeteners being found in the environment were coming out in Europe, in countries like Sweden and Germany and Switzerland. And basically, ever since our technician developed the method, we started analyzing all of our samples for these four artificial sweeteners. So basically, when they started finding this stuff in water in Europe, we were not far behind in finding it in the waters that we looked at in Canada. And since then, we've been looking at artificial sweeteners in Canadian rivers, groundwater, septic systems, municipal wastewater treatment plants, and landfill samples as well. We seem to find the artificial sweeteners wherever there's people, wherever there's wastewater.
Which artificial sweeteners were you looking at specifically, and how did you choose which ones to look for?
We looked for four of them: acesulfame, saccharin, cyclamate, and sucralose. These are four of the probably the most used artificial sweeteners in Canada. Aspartame is another one, but it actually breaks down in the human body, so we don't really find it in the environment. But these other four that I mentioned, we do find in the environment. They don't get broken down in the human body, so they end up in the wastewater. They're also so resistant to being broken down that they don't break down in the wastewater treatment process. So whether that's in a municipal wastewater treatment plant or a private septic system, the sweeteners are not broken down, and then so they end up being released in the environment. Every wastewater sample we've looked at has had artificial sweeteners in it. They're found everywhere, and that's because they're very common in the foods that we eat. So diet pop, for example, is probably the one people are most familiar with. You also see the little packets of artificial sweetener when you get your coffee, and they're over there with the packets of sugar. But they're also in a lot of other foods that you may not suspect, like sugar-free gums, chewing gums mostly have artificial sweeteners in them as the sweetener. They're in a lot of over-the-counter medications like cough syrups, and they're even in toothpaste. So what we found is that every wastewater system, every septic system we've looked at has had artificial sweeteners in it. Even when we sample people's septic systems and they swear they don't use artificial sweeteners because they are in so many products, people don't realize that they are consuming them.
Yeah, for sure. So moving on then to start talking about the research, can you describe the landscape? Like, where are you looking for these sweeteners?
For this particular study, we were looking in the Nottawasaga River watershed, which is about 30 miles north of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It was part of one of my graduate students' thesis research. This area is largely agricultural. They grow a lot of potatoes and sod and corn, all of which use a lot of nitrogen fertilizer. And so this area was known to have high groundwater nitrate concentrations. And her study was looking at using some novel tracers to figure out exactly where that nitrate was coming from. It sort of seems obvious that it's from it would be from all the agricultural fertilizer. But there is other sources, such as wastewater septic systems that could be contributing nitrate as well, and fertilizer use in cities as well on people's lawns. So she was looking at the nitrate issue, and we thought, well, it'd be interesting to measure the artificial sweeteners in her groundwater samples as well, just to see what the wastewater contribution could be and see if there was any relation with the nitrate concentration and the artificial sweeteners, which would suggest then that some of that nitrate was from the septic systems.
Sure.
And we really didn't have much information on how prevalent the artificial sweeteners in sort of rural areas would be. That's where all these septic systems are discharging to groundwater, but there wasn't really any scientific studies to show, is there a lot of artificial sweeteners in the groundwater in these areas because of the septic systems or not? So we really wanted to see how widespread the artificial sweeteners and thus the wastewater is in these systems.
Can you tell me more about how you guys went about answering this question?
Yeah, so we collected groundwater from two different sources. The first one was from private domestic wells. So for the people that live in the country, their wastewater gets treated by these septic systems. But they also get their water from a private well as opposed to from a municipal water supply. So we, with people's permission, we sampled their well water, usually by sampling an outside tap or some other tap that wasn't connected to or any water treatment equipment in their house, like a water softener. We wanted to bypass that and just get the raw well water. So we sampled people's private wells. We also sampled groundwater that was seeping out along the Nottawasaga River. So the way the geology is in this area, the groundwater actually discharges along the banks of the river. So using a small boat or canoe, we floated down the river, and then as you're looking at the shoreline, you can see where the groundwater is bubbling out of the banks of the river, and then we sampled those. So those would be what we call groundwater seeps or groundwater springs. Those are the two types of groundwater we sampled, and then we ran them for various chemical analysis, including the artificial sweeteners.
Side question, what time of year were you doing this? Do you find that you have more of those riverbank seeps at different times of the year, or is there any research on what that means or does to the environment?
We were sampling during the summer, mainly because that's when we could access the banks fairly easily. We did do some sampling in June and then later in the fall again one year, and we basically found the same springs. So it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of difference in, say, the amount of flow. It'll depend year to year on the weather as well, how much rain and that kind of thing. But we didn't look at it in the winter to see if some of these seeps were flowing in the winter, but I suspect some of them would be.
Great. And then once you had your samples, how did you process them to look for the sweeteners?
So we use a method called ion chromatography and mass spectrometry. So this instrument, the first part, the ion chromatography part of it, it separates the chemicals in the water so that they go into the mass spectrometer machine at different times. And this is analogous to perhaps an experiment that some people have done maybe back in high school chemistry class, where you put a dot of ink on a piece of paper and then put the end of that piece of paper in water. And as the water moves up the paper and hits that black ink, the ink starts to separate out into its various colors as the water moves. That's basically what the chromatography part of the instrument is doing. So the different chemicals, the different sweeteners go into the mass spectrometer at different times. Then the mass spectrometer actually identifies what those specific chemicals are and quantifies how much is there. So that's how we can tell which sweeteners, which chemicals we have, and how much is there.
And what did you find?
Well, we found that about 30% of the samples we collected, whether it was groundwater from the wells or groundwater from the seeps, about 30% of those samples had one or more of the artificial sweeteners in them. So that means about 30% of the groundwater we looked at had an impact from wastewater. The other thing we looked at was, okay, well, like I mentioned, nitrate is an issue in this area. And was there any relationship between the concentration of artificial sweeteners and the concentration of nitrate? And what we found is there really wasn't. It confirms what we kind of already knew and suspected from other research, and that is that the nitrate in this groundwater is largely from the agricultural fertilizer use and not from nitrate coming from septic systems.
Were you surprised at all about how much you found? Did you find a lot of the sweeteners there or not as much?
Most of the concentrations were fairly low. The fact that we found that 30% of the groundwater we looked at had an impact from septic systems was kind of surprising, but it still fits with what has been known in shallow aquifers that have septic systems in them. It's a lot of wells, similar percentage have been affected by septics when they look at other indicators such as bacteria. So it was kind of reassuring that we found a similar value using the artificial sweeteners. We did have a couple of wells that had really high concentrations of artificial sweeteners, indicating that they had a lot of wastewater impact. Luckily, neither of these wells were being used as a drinking water source. Even so, we recommended that for any wells that we did find artificial sweeteners, that the homeowners get their well tested by the local health authority for bacteria, E. coli specifically, just to make sure that the water is fine. Because these artificial sweeteners don't degrade very quickly, the water can actually be free of sort of the harmful chemicals or harmful bacteria, and you would still get the artificial sweeteners. Now, the artificial sweeteners themselves are approved for use in Canada, the four that I talked about. Actually, cyclamate is not used in the U.S., but it is in Canada. So they're approved for human consumption in Canada at levels, you know, hundreds of thousands of times more concentrated than what we find in the water here. So the artificial sweeteners themselves are not the health issue. They're just an indicator that there could be a septic wastewater impact to the groundwater. And then perhaps if that's found, then people should have their well water tested for other things that might be harmful.
Yeah, for sure. And what does this research mean for other researchers? What are some of the practical implications they can take away from this research?
Yeah, so the artificial sweeteners do us a really powerful way of detecting and quantifying the wastewater once it's been released to the environment. So, like I said before, the advantages of, compared to some of the other tracers that we used to use, is that the artificial sweeteners last longer in the environment. They're at higher concentrations, and we can detect them at very low concentrations, which means we can detect them after they've been diluted in the environment by tens of thousands of times. For example, acesulfame, probably the sweetener that's the most resistant to breaking down, our method detection limit for that is 2 parts per trillion. So we can measure the concentration down to 2 parts per trillion.
Wow.
If you took a can of Diet Pop and dumped it into an Olympic-sized swimming pool, that would still be 5 times more than we can analyze for. Our analytical methods are very sensitive. So this allows researchers to track wastewater in the environment long after it's been released. And then you can look at, for instance, what's happening to the other chemicals in the wastewater. Because if we assume that the artificial sweetener, especially acesulfame, for example, is not breaking down very fast, and then we look, say, downstream in a river, you've got a wastewater input, and then you go downstream as the concentrations of the sweetener go down because of dilution, you can compare that, look at the other chemicals that are also in the wastewater to tell if they're just being diluted as well or if they're actually being broken down. So that's one application. Another thing that's been done is cities have looked at groundwater beneath the city, and using artificial sweeteners, they can tell where the sewer systems are leaking. And they found that that often matches up with where the infrastructure is fairly old. So I think it helps researchers figure out what's happening with the wastewater that's released to the environment. And it's a tool for us then to make better treatment processes and better understand what the consequences of releasing this wastewater into the environment, especially some of the micropollutants that might be in the wastewater.
Yeah. Can you translate kind of into then the general public? Like, what does this mean for them in a practical sense? What benefit is this providing to them?
Right. In all honesty, that's probably going to be more of a research tool. The analyses, even though they're reasonably cheap for us to do, they still are quite expensive and involved. There's not a whole lot of labs that can do this. So it's not something that the general public is going to get their well water tested for. But it will allow researchers to, like I said, better understand what happens to wastewater in the environment. And that way, hopefully, build better treatment processes and ensure a safer water supply and a safer, healthier environment as well. Like I said, fish and other aquatic organisms can be impacted by the chemicals that are in wastewater as well, especially some of the estrogen-mimicking compounds and stuff like that. So hopefully, the net result will be a safer water supply and healthier environment for most people to enjoy.
Well, that's wonderful. What about future research for you specifically? What are you looking into next?
Well, we continue to use this artificial sweetener tool. We run it on most of the samples that we collect for various projects. Most of what I do involves looking at water quality impacts, whether it's groundwater or rivers. I'm usually looking at some sort of contamination issue and trying to understand what happened and what the source of it is. So it's always nice to have a tool that we can use to definitively say whether we're dealing with a wastewater source for the contaminant or not. And the artificial sweeteners basically do that. If we don't find artificial sweeteners, then we know there is no wastewater in our sample. I've got a project right now up in the Yukon Territory in Canada where we are using the artificial sweeteners to figure out where the wastewater is going from a municipal wastewater treatment plant. And it looks like they thought they knew where this wastewater was going. Basically, it's discharged to a river, a small stream that flows into a wetland. And then the flow kind of spreads out. It's not very easy to see where it goes. And then that ultimately makes its way to another river. We're using the artificial sweeteners to figure out exactly how that wastewater is moving through the wetland. And that way we can look at the other chemicals that are in the water. And if we don't find them, we know that they've been broken down. However, we still find the artificial sweeteners. So we know that we are still actually dealing with the wastewater that's moving through the wetland. Because otherwise, if we don't find any of the other chemicals, but we also don't find the artificial sweeteners, we know we're not looking in the right spot. We're not dealing with wastewater. That's just the natural water in the wetland.
Has there been any research on using this kind of tracing technology on different kinds of septic systems or municipal treatment centers just to be like, hey, if we construct it this way or build our sewers a different way, there's less of an impact? Or is that something, years out from here?
Yeah, there has been work on that. And the technologies do exist to actually take out some of these organic micropollutants, like the drugs I mentioned, the caffeine and the acetaminophen and the estrogen-mimicking compounds and the artificial sweeteners. Those organic micropollutants can be taken out. And one of the processes that's used to do that is ozonation. So they actually add ozone to the wastewater, and it breaks down some of these chemicals. So, for instance, Switzerland has spent like €1 billion to upgrade 100 of its wastewater treatment plants to add this treatment technology, this advanced oxidation technology, to remove some of these organic microplumes, because they decided that they don't want them in the water, they don't want them in the environment. But like I said, it's costly. So we do have the technology to do this, but people have to be willing to pay for it. And that would be reflected in their municipal water bill, for instance. I think less work has been done at looking at how to modify septic systems, because they're very small and the cost is being borne by individual homeowners. So I think it's more practical to treat a city's large wastewater treatment plant and clean up that effluent. That's a little easier than trying to do it for individual septic systems. But the technology is there to treat this thing.
Do you find that's a bit of a double-edged sword for your work, in that it's kind of getting rid of the things that you're using to see where it goes?
It hasn't really been a problem for me, because we're really not using that technology here in Canada to any significant degree. So I basically still find sweeteners in wastewater wherever I look. So it hasn't really impacted my research yet. I mean, ultimately, if we were discharging water that was so clean, it had no artificial sweeteners in it, then it would probably have none of the other organic micropollutants in it as well. So then I would be, I guess, happy to be out of that line of work if our wastewater was so clean.
Yeah, that would be great. All right, I've got two more questions for you. The first one is, if people are interested in these topics, where can they go to find more information?
Yeah, so I found that the EPA's website is pretty good. You go on the EPA's website and search for private wells. It'll give you information about if you have a private well for your water supply, what you should do as far as maintenance. Same if you have a septic system. The EPA has recommendations on how to get it maintained and how often. So the EPA's website is pretty good. And they also have a section on municipal wastewater treatment, and people can find out more information about how that works.
Excellent. We'll include links to those in the show notes. And then final question, if people want to help with some of these environmental quality issues, what can they do to get involved?
I would say number one, be mindful of what you put down your drain. We kind of like to flush it and forget it. But these chemicals that we consume in our daily lives, and chemicals, the stuff that we ingest through our diet, the medications we take, the products we use in our hair and whatnot, those go down the drain and we sometimes see them again. And that's one of the things that the artificial sweeteners has done, is dramatically illustrate that. We've had in the Nottawasaga, 30% of people's well water has sweeteners in it. So those things that they flushed down the toilet have come back and now are in the tap water. If people are mindful of what they put down the drain and realize that they may see it again in their water, or at a minimum, it's getting out into the environment through the wastewater treatment. And, it could have effects on the aquatic organisms and the rivers as well. So I think the artificial sweeteners have been good in highlighting that environmental consequence of using all these chemicals in our daily lives. Another thing that people can do, if they have a septic system and their own well, is to make sure they're maintained. Again, the EPA's website gives recommendations on how often you should have the well and septic system maintained, and what should be done, what to look for. So that's all things that will help make the system work better and decrease the environmental impact.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Field Lab Earth. If you'd like to find out more about today's topic, our featured article for this episode is always freely available. You'll find a link to today's paper and other resources for this episode in our show notes or on our website. If you have any questions, comments, or recommendations for show topics, please contact us at podcast@sciencesocieties.org or on Twitter @FieldLabEarth. If you'd like to hear more content like this, please subscribe, and don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes or anywhere else you find your podcast if you like our show. This podcast is a joint production of the Tri-Societies, the American Society of Agronomy, Crop Science Society of America, and Soil Science Society of America. Special thanks to Lobo Loco for the use of their song Spook Castle on the intro and outro of our show. Opinions and conclusions expressed by authors are their own and are not considered as those of the American Society of Agronomy, Crop Science Society of America, Soil Science Society of America, its staff, its members, or its advertisers.